Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, I'm pleased to welcome a new guest commentator to the program, Isaac Landes. Isaac Landes studies history and philosophy at the Hebrew University and has long been a member of the Pardes community. Isaac Landes will discuss Vayishlach, and now, Isaac Landes.
Thank you, Larry. So in this parsha, we witness a showdown that's been 20 years in the making. And I'm referring to the moment where Esav and Yaakov meet. Now, if we remember, Yaakov stole the blessing from his older brother Esav 20 years ago back in Parashat Toldot. And since then, he ran away to his uncle Laban. He lived there for 20 years. He married his various wives, had his sons, and now he's coming back. And for 20 years, we've been wondering, what is the meeting going to be like between these two brothers? Yaakov, who's returning, Esav, who has sworn to kill his brother once he sees him. The truth is that we haven't been waiting for this showdown for 20 years. We've actually been waiting for 60 years. If we look back in Parashat Toldot to the period in which Rivka is pregnant with the twins, we'll see something very interesting. I'm going to read in Hebrew and then I'm going to read in English. V'yomer Hashem la, shnei goyim bevitnech u'shnei lumim me'ach yiperedu, u'lo'om me'lo'om ye'matz, v'rav yavod seyo. In English, two nations are in your womb, two separate people shall issue from your body. One people shall be mightier than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. This is the prophecy that their mother Rivka receives about her twins, about Yaakov and Esav, that they're going to spread out, and they will be two distinct people, two different peoples, two different nations, and that the older one shall serve the younger one. Just a little question on this pasuk, why is the emphasis on the older one serving the younger one? Wouldn't it be more logical for the emphasis to be on the younger one dominating the older one? Why is it that Esav is set to serve Yaakov, but it doesn't say that Yaakov should dominate Esav? It's an interesting question. I want you to hold it in our mind as we continue. So in order to understand this showdown, understand what is going on in Yaakov's mind, what is going on in Esav's mind, what is the meaning of this meeting that they have 20 years later, we first have to go back to the day in which they parted. And the day they parted was a fateful day, an eventful day probably for both of them and also maybe for Jewish history. Yaakov steals the blessing from his older brother Esav. His older brother Esav is to receive the blessing of the firstborn from Isaac. Yitzchak says to Esav, go and hunt and prepare the korev, the food that I love. Meanwhile, Yaakov sneaks in, steals the blessing. We're going to look at the blessing of Yaakov, and we're going to look at the blessing of Esav. And through these two blessings, we'll then go back to the encounter that we have now in our parsha, Parashat Vayishlach, and we're going to understand the motives of two of the brothers. Yitzchak gives the blessing of Esav to Yaakov, and the blessing is as follows. V'iten lecha Elohim ital ha-shamayim mushmanei ha-aretz v'rov dagan v'tirosh, yavducha amim v'ishtachavu lecha leumim, havegvir la'achicha v'ishtachavu lecha bnei imecha. May God give you of the dew of the heaven the fat of the earth, abundance of new grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow to you. Be master over your brothers, and let your mother's sons bow to you. Cursed be those who curse you, blessed be those who bless you. It's a pretty good blessing, if you ask me. The fat of the land, the abundance that the earth has to give forth. Yaakov is to dominate, nations are to bow down to him, the sons of his mother, his brother, are supposed to, bow down to him and be subservient to him, and he is supposed to rule, to dominate, and to live in wealth. That's his blessing. Just hold it in your mind for a moment. And let's go to the blessing that Esav receives. And it's as follows. V'yan Yitzchak avi v'yomer elav, hine mishmenei ha'aretz yeh moshavecha, mital ha'shamayim me'al, v'al chorbecha tichye, v'techicha tavod, v'ya kesher tarid, uferakta ulo ma'al tzavarecha. See, your abode shall enjoy the fat of the earth and the dew from the heaven above. Yet by your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And when you go restive, you shall break this yoke from your neck. So he is to have riches as well in the abundance of the earth. He is to live by his sword, maybe a man of military prowess, a man who tend to violence. And he is supposed to serve his brother. Let us go back to our meeting in Parashat Vayishlach, and we'll see. Well, I'll ask it like this. What do we expect to see? We expect to see the meaning of Yaakov and Esav being one of complete control of Yaakov. Yaakov should be completely in control. He should dominate. He's got the blessing of the firstborn. He is the chosen one. He's the one that God has spoken to. He is the patriarch. He is the founder of the children of Israel. He should be the one who dominates this conversation with Esau. After all, that's the blessing he received from his father. He received that blessing. His brother should bow down to him. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Not only does he appear to be somewhat, and I'm sorry to say it, a weakling, he's bowing down to Esau, he is subservient to Esau, Esau is the one who controls and dictates the terms of the meeting and how things go down. Not only that, that's, as we say in Hebrew, nicha, if only that. But it appears to be that Esau's blessings have completely come true. Yaakov's blessings haven't come true at all. He's not rich, at least not yet, and he's definitely not controlling his brother, while Esau is completely in control. He has 400 men with him, 400 ishimo. So he's obviously living by the sword. He brings 400 fighting men with him to this meeting of with his brother Yaakov. And half our parsha is dedicated to the riches and the glory of Esau and his descendants, and how many kings and how many chieftains they had. Apparently, Yitzchak's blessings for Esau have completely come true, whereas Yaakov's, the blessings that Yaakov has received from Yitzchak, don't appear to be coming true at all. It's actually a good question. Like, what do we do with this? How do we respond to this information? It's hard. It's not easy. Now, many commentators have tried to find different ways to show that Yaakov really did dominate the meeting. That Yaakov really was in control. He used soft power. He didn't use hard power. But the fact is, if we look at the pshat, at the simple understanding of the text, it remains problematic. So what I'm going to do now, in order to explain why the meeting goes down the way it does, and what's going through the minds of the brothers, and why they act the way they do, I'm going to take two approaches. I'm going to tell it first from the point of view of Esau, how Esau sees this meeting, why Esau acts the way he does, and then we'll go back and we'll look at it through the eyes of Yaakov, why Yaakov acts the way he does, and how he understands the meeting. And between those two characters, we'll get a complete picture. The working assumption is that Esau has come to this meeting with his brother Yaakov in order to kill him. It's not so much of an assumption, it's pretty much fact. After all, as soon as Yaakov gets the blessing and Esau finds out about it, Esau swears to kill his brother. And I'm going to quote. V'istom Esav et Yaakov ala bracha shel b'cho aviv, v'yomer Esav belibo, yikavu yemei evel avi, v'ilgat Yaakov achi. Now Esav harbored a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing which his father had given him. And Esav said to himself, let but the mourning period of my father come, and I will kill my brother Jacob. So obviously he wants to kill his brother Jacob, and this is what he's doing at the meeting. But if we look closely, we'll see that Esav doesn't just want to kill Yaakov on any old day. He says, Yikovu yemei evelavi, let the mourning period of my father come. Meaning that Esav doesn't want to kill Yaakov while Yitzchak is still alive. He wants to wait until Yitzchak dies and then he can kill Yaakov. Let's go back to Parashat Vayishlach, 20 years later. This big meeting between the camp of Yaakov and the camp of Esav. Yitzchak is still alive. Their father is still alive. And since Yitzchak is alive, Esav doesn't kill Yaakov, not because Yaakov managed to wiggle his way out of it somehow. It's just not the time. He's not ready. He said, I'll only do it when my father dies. Yitzchak, his father, is still alive. Therefore, it's obvious that he came to this engagement with his brother Yaakov not ready to kill him. Maybe to intimidate, maybe to dominate, maybe to tell him, don't forget, I'm here and look at these 400 fighting men that are here with me. But whatever he's doing, he's not there to actually kill him. I think we can find good proof of this in the words of Rivka. Back in Parashat Toldot, she finds out what her older son Esav wants to do. And she says to Yaakov, you gotta escape, you gotta run. I'm not gonna read the entire verses. But she says, Lam eshkol gam shnechem yom echad. Let me not lose the both of you on one day. So she says to Yaakov, flee, because I don't want to lose both of you on one day. Which both of you is she talking about? The most normal or most common interpretation is that she's talking about Esav and Yaakov. I don't want to lose both of you. You guys will fight to the death. There'll be some sort of climactic battle and both of you will die and I'll lose both my sons. But if we look a little deeper, and if we think about the Rivka we know has no love for Esav. In fact, nowhere in the Torah does it even show them talking to each other at any point. Who are the two loves of her life? Yitzchak, her husband, and Yaakov, her son. Lama eshkol shnechem yom echad? Why should I grieve for the both of you on one day? She's not talking about Yaakov and Esav. She's talking about Yitzchak and Esav. Because she knows. She knows whether through divine providence or through just a mother knowing the qualities of her son, she knows that Esav will wait until Yitzchak dies. And that's why she tells Yaakov to get out. Lama eshkol shnechem yom echad? I don't want to grieve for my husband and my son on the same day. Back to our parsha, back to the meeting. Okay, so we understand that Esav isn't there to kill Yaakov, but why doesn't he kill him later on? At the end of the parsha, Yitzchak dies, and Esav and Yaakov come to bury him together. Now's the time, Esav. Now is the time that he was waiting to kill his brother Yaakov. So why doesn't he? Again, we're going to have to look closely to the verses to understand. Yaakov prepares many gifts to give to his brother, and he sends them forth before their actual meeting. But the truth is that Esav refuses to receive these gifts. He says, and I'm quoting the words of Esav, "Yesh li rav achi, yeh lecha asher lecha." Esav says to Yaakov, seeing all the gifts, he says, "I have so much, my brother. I have enough. What is yours should be yours." He refuses to receive the gifts. But what happens? It says, "Viftzar bo vikach." And when he urged them, he accepted. When Yaakov urged Esav to receive the gifts, Esav accepted. What does this mean? Yaakov knows his brother. This is the same Esav that years ago sold his birthright for a bowl of lentil soup. This is the Esav that for a bowl of lentil soup gave up being a firstborn, sold it to his brother Yaakov. This same Esav is an Esav that now that has received some goats and some camels is willing to forgo his revenge. Yaakov knows his brother and buys his way out of the revenge, out of the death warrant that Esav has on his head by giving him some goats and camels. At the beginning, Esav doesn't want to accept, he refuses, but Yaakov knows his brother, he urges him, and Esav makes the deal. And that is the way that Yaakov gets himself out of danger. Because a person doesn't kill somebody who's given them a gift. You don't give someone who's given, and especially if you've accepted the gift. Once you've accepted a gift from somebody, there's no chance you're going to kill them. So first of all, we see from this that Yaakov does understand his brother a little bit and comes out a little ahead in the encounter. He manages not to get killed by understanding how his brother's mind works and knowing that Esav always goes for the deal and is willing to sell anything. But we still have another question, our major question, the deeper question. This explains maybe why Esav didn't kill Yaakov. And this explains a little bit how Yaakov still, you know, has maybe was using soft power. Maybe was using good diplomacy and managed to get himself out of it. But there's no way you can read this and understand that Yaakov dominated the meeting. That Yaakov was the stronger brother. That Esav bowed down before Yaakov. That just didn't happen. It didn't exist. So how? How does this blessing that Yaakov received from his father Yitzchak, a blessing that since it comes from God is supposed to come true, why didn't it actualize in reality? What happened? Why didn't it work the way it was supposed to? So to understand this major issue, which is really the root of the Dvar Torah, let's go back to Parashat Toldot again. Let's go back to the blessings. I'm going to ask two questions. The first question I'm going to ask is, how does Yaakov even think he can steal a blessing? What does that mean to steal a blessing? Blessing isn't some sort of object that you can just steal. It comes from God. It comes from God, is given through his father Yitzchak. But still, it's a spiritual thing. How can Yaakov think he can steal it? It raises actually disturbing theological questions, as if a blessing is something tangible that can be bought and sold, and I don't know, and stolen. So that's the first question. Second question is that if we notice that before Yaakov leaves to the house of Laban, he receives a second blessing from his father Isaac. Why does he need another blessing? He's already received the blessing of the firstborn. He's already received the best blessing you can get, the blessing that literally Esav is willing to kill him for. Why does he need another blessing? What is in the second blessing that Yitzchak gives him? What is in that second blessing that Yitzchak gives him that's so important? Why is it even needed? So we have two questions. How can you steal a blessing? And second, why does Yaakov need two blessings? At this point, I'm going to say something a little radical. My understanding is that what did Yaakov do when he went in dressed up as Esav to take Esav's blessing? What did he do? The common or the Pashut understanding is that he stole the blessing. The blessing is now upon him. But I'm going to hold something else. He didn't steal the blessing. He neutralized the blessing. You can't steal a blessing. So instead of Esav getting it, it's not that Yaakov got it. It's just that nobody got it. The blessing is completely canceled. Yitzchak gave it thinking it was Esav, but it wasn't. It was Yaakov. And hence, the blessing is nullified. It doesn't exist. It had nothing sort of to latch onto. You can't just send the blessing out into there. It has to have something concrete, the person you're actually blessing. And since Yaakov was not Esav, and Yitzchak thought he was blessing Esav, the blessing doesn't even hold at all. Has no basis, has no connection to reality, doesn't exist. I'm going to back this up. Back this up two ways. I can back this up by answering my second question. Why does Yaakov then need another blessing from his father Isaac? Because he doesn't have a blessing yet. If the first blessing is nullified, if you can't steal a blessing, and the first blessing is nullified, then it's not that Yaakov has it, nobody has it, it doesn't exist. So here we are in a case where Esav has the blessing, because Esav did get a blessing from Isaac, not the one he wanted, but he did get one. Yaakov has no blessings, because the one he received when he was disguised as Esav isn't working. That's why Yitzchak gives him another blessing. And if we look closely at that blessing, we'll see something very interesting. And Yitzchak says to Yaakov, Ve'el Shaddai yivirech otcha, v'yafrecha v'yirbecha v'yita lekalamim, v'yiten lecha et birkat Avraham lecha ulezerecha itach, l'reshtecha et eretz megurecha asher natan Elohim l'Avraham. May El Shaddai bless you, make you fertile and numerous, so that you may become an assembly of peoples. May grant you the blessings of Avram to you and your offspring, that you may possess the land where you are sojourning, which God gave to Abraham. What is the blessing here that he gets? He gets the blessing to be fruitful, to multiply, to receive the land, and to get the blessing of Avram. What is the blessing of Avram? The blessing of Avram, if you look through Parashat Lech Lecha Ve'eran Chesera, is basically to be fruitful, to multiply, to have offspring that are kings and chieftains, to inherit the land. May all the people of the world be blessed by you. Those are basically the blessings of Avram, the Birkat Avram that Yitzchak passes on to his son Yaakov. If we look at Yaakov's life, the second blessings seem to come true completely. Is he fruitful and numerous? Yes. Is Yaakov's descendants become kings and chieftains? Yes. Does he inherit the land? Yes. Are all the people of the land blessed through him? Yes. The second blessing comes true completely. The first blessing, the blessing of domination, the blessing of that the nations of the world shall bow to you, that your brothers shall bow to you, blessing that says that you shall have a lot of wealth, but doesn't specifically mention the land of Israel. That blessing doesn't come true, not in Yaakov's life, not in Jewish tradition in general. Nowhere in Jewish history do we see the first blessings of Yaakov, the ones that he got under the guise of Esav, ever coming true. Nothing about the domination of the others. It just doesn't have any basis in reality. It's not part of the Jewish tradition. It's not part of Esav's life. It's not part of the children of Israel's life. But the second blessings, of course they've come true. Just look at it. Have we been fruitful and multiplied? Yes. Have we inherited the land of Israel? Yes. Have there been chieftains and kings among us? Yes. Have the nations of the world been blessed by the Jewish people? I think so. I think the Jewish people have done a lot of really good stuff for the world. So let's go back to our parsha for a moment. The reason that Yaakov doesn't dominate his brother Esav in that meeting is that Yaakov never received the blessing to dominate his brother Esav. He's not supposed to dominate his brother Esav. He doesn't have the blessing to do it. He doesn't have the spiritual legitimacy to go about it. And anything else that he's given, he gets. He gets the land, as I said, he gets the numerousness, he gets the kings, the chieftains, the nations of the world are blessed by him. But that thing to dominate Esav and for the nations of the world to bow down to him, he never received it. And that's why it doesn't happen. So it's not that Yaakov in our parsha has sort of disappointed us or not lived up to expectations. He's completely lived up to expectations. Just we had the wrong expectations. But now that we have the right expectations, I think we can better understand Yaakov and how he works. We can understand maybe the Jewish people and how we work. Because after all, and I'll leave you with this thought, do we really want the blessings that were promised to Esav? Wouldn't we be happier with blessings that were specifically tailored for Yaakov? And being the children of Yaakov, I think we would want those. Thank you, and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Isaac. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.